In trumpeters, the neurons and maps that respond to brassy sounds enlarge. Brain imaging shows that musicians have several areas of their brains, the motor cortex and the cerebellum, among others, that differ from those of non-musicians. Imaging also shows that musicians who begin playing before the age of 7 have larger brain areas connecting the two hemispheres. Giorgio Vasari, the art historian, tells us that when Michelangelo painted the Sistine Chapel, he built a scaffold almost to the ceiling and painted for 20 months. As Vasari writes, the work was executed in great discomfort, as Michelangelo had to stand with his head thrown back, and he so injured his eyesight that for several months he could only read and look at designs in that posture. This may have been a case of his brain rewiring itself to see only in the odd position that it had adapted itself to. Vasari's claim might seem incredible, but studies show that when people wear prism inversion glasses, which turn the world upside down, they find that, after a short while, their brain changes and their perceptual centers flip so that they perceive the world right side up and even read books held upside down. When they take the glasses off, they see the world as though it were upside down until they readapt, as Michelangelo did. It is not just highly cultured activities that rewire the brain. Brain scans of London taxi drivers show that the more years a cabbie spends navigating London streets, the larger the volume of his hippocampus, that part of the brain that stores spatial representations. Even leisure activities change our brain. Meditators and meditation teachers have a thicker insula, a part of the cortex activated by paying close attention. Unlike musicians, taxi drivers, and meditation teachers, the sea gypsies are an entire culture of hunter-gatherers on the open sea, all of whom share underwater sight. In all cultures, members tend to share certain common activities, the signature activities of a culture. For sea gypsies, it is seeing underwater. For those of us living in the information age, signature activities include reading, writing, computer literacy, and using electronic media. Signature activities differ from such universal human activities as seeing, hearing, and walking, which develop with minimal prompting and are shared by all humanity, even those rare people who have been raised outside culture. Signature activities require training and cultural experience and lead to the development of a new, specially wired brain. Human beings did not evolve to see clearly underwater. We left our aquatic eyes behind with scales and fins when our ancestors emerged from the sea and evolved to see on land. Underwater sight is not the gift of evolution. The gift is brain plasticity, which allows us to adapt to a vast range of environments. Are our brains stuck in the Pleistocene age? A popular explanation of how our brain comes to perform cultural activities is proposed by evolutionary psychologists, a group of researchers who argued that all human beings share the same basic brain modules, departments in the brain, or brain hardware, and these modules developed to do specific cultural tasks, some for language, some for mating, some for classifying the world, and so on. These modules evolved in the Pleistocene age, from about 1.8 million to 10,000 years ago, when humanity lived as hunter-gatherers, and the modules have been passed on, essentially unchanged genetically. Because we all share these modules, key aspects of human nature and psychology are fairly universal. Then, in an addendum, the psychologists note that the adult human brain is therefore anatomically unchanged since the Pleistocene. This addendum goes too far because it doesn't take plasticity, also part of our genetic heritage, into account. The hunter-gatherer brain was as plastic as our own, and it was not stuck in the Pleistocene at all, but rather was able to reorganize its structure and functions in order to respond to changing conditions. In fact, it was that ability to modify itself that enabled us to emerge from the Pleistocene, a process that has been called cognitive fluidity by the archaeologist Stephen Mithen, and that, I would argue, probably has its basis in brain plasticity. All our brain modules are plastic to some degree and can be combined and differentiated over the course of our individual lives to perform a number of functions. as in Pasquale Leone's experiment, in which he blindfolded people and demonstrated that their occipital lobe, which normally processes vision, could process sound and touch. Modular change is necessary for adaptation to the modern world, which exposes us to things our hunter-gatherer ancestors never had to contend with. An fMRI study shows that we recognize cars and trucks with the same brain module we use to recognize faces. Clearly, the hunter-gatherer brain did not evolve to recognize cars and trucks. It is likely that the face module was most competitively suited to process these shapes. Headlights are sufficiently like eyes, the hood like a nose, the grill like a mouth, so that the plastic brain with a little training and structural alteration could process a car with the facial recognition system. The many brain modules a child must use for reading, writing, and computer work evolved millennia before literacy, which is only several thousand years old. Literacy spread has been so rapid that the brain could not have evolved a genetically based module specifically for reading. Literacy, after all, can be taught to illiterate hunter-gatherer tribes in a single generation, and there is no way the whole tribe could develop a gene for a reading module in that time. A child today, when it learns to read, recapitulates the stages humanity went through. 30,000 years ago, humanity learned to draw on cave walls, which required forming and strengthening links between the visual functions, which process images, and the motor functions, which move the hand. This stage was followed in about 3000 BC by the invention of hieroglyphics, where simple, standardized images were used to represent objects. Not a big change. Next, these hieroglyphic images were converted into letters, and the first phonetic alphabet was developed to represent sounds instead of visual images. This change required strengthening neuronal connections between different functions that process the images of letters, their sound, and their meaning, as well as motor functions that move the eyes across the page. As Mrzenek and Talal learned, it is possible to see reading circuits on brain scans. Thus, signature cultural activities give rise to signature brain circuits that did not exist in our ancestors. According to Mrzenek, our brains are different from those of all humans before us. Our brain is modified on a substantial scale, physically and functionally, each time we learn a new skill or develop a new ability. Massive changes are associated with our modern cultural specializations. And though not everyone uses the same brain areas to read because the brain is plastic, there are typical circuits for reading, physical evidence that cultural activity leads to modified brain structures. Why human beings became the preeminent bearers of culture? One could rightly ask, why is it that human beings, and not other animals, which also have plastic brains, developed culture? True, other animals such as chimpanzees have rudimentary forms of culture and can both make tools and teach their descendants to use them or perform rudimentary operations with symbols. But these are very limited. As the neuroscientist Robert Sapolsky points out, the answer lies in a very slight genetic variation between us and chimpanzees. We share 98% of our DNA with chimpanzees. The Human Genome Project enabled scientists to determine precisely which genes differed, and it turns out that one of them is a gene that determines how many neurons we will make. Our neurons are basically identical to those of chimps, and even of marine snails. In the embryo, all our neurons start from a single cell, which divides and makes two, then four, and so on. A regulatory gene determines when that process of division will stop. And it is this gene that differs between humans and chimps. That process goes on for enough rounds until human beings have about 100 billion neurons. It stops a few rounds earlier in chimps, so they have a brain one-third the size of our own. Chimpanzee brains are plastic, but the sheer quantitative difference between ours and theirs leads to an exponentially greater number of interactions between them, because each neuron can be connected to thousands of cells. As the scientist Gerald Edelman has pointed out, the human cortex alone has 30 billion neurons and is capable of making 1 million billion synaptic connections. Edelman writes, "If we considered the number of possible neural circuits, we would be dealing with hyper-astronomical numbers, 10 followed by at least a million zeros. There are 10 followed by 79 zeros, give or take a few, of particles in the known universe. These staggering numbers explain why the human brain can be described as the most complex known object in the universe, and why it is capable of ongoing massive microstructural change, and capable of performing so many different mental functions and behaviors, including our different cultural activities. A non-Darwinian way to alter biological structures. Up until the discovery of neuroplasticity, scientists believed that the only way that the brain changes its structure is through evolution of the species, which in most cases takes many thousands of years. According to modern Darwinian evolutionary theory, new biological brain structures develop in a species when genetic mutations arise, creating variation in the gene pool. If these variations have survival value, they are more likely to be passed on to the next generation. But plasticity creates a new way, beyond genetic mutation and variation, of introducing new biological brain structures in individuals by non-Darwinian means. When a parent reads, the microscopic structure of his or her own brain is changed. Reading can be taught to children, and it changes the biological structure of their brains. The brain is changed in two ways. The fine details of the circuits connecting the modules are altered, no small matter. But so are the original hunter-gatherer brain modules themselves, because in the plastic brain, change in one area or brain function flows through the brain, typically altering the modules that are connected to it. Mrzenek demonstrated that change in the auditory cortex, increasing firing rates, leads to changes in the frontal lobe connected to it, and says, you can't change the primary auditory cortex without changing what is happening in the frontal cortex. It's an absolute impossibility. The brain doesn't have one set of plastic rules for one part and another set for another part. If that were the case, the different parts of the brain would not be able to interact. When two modules are linked in a new way in a cultural activity, as when reading links visual and auditory modules as never before, the modules for both functions are changed by the interaction, creating a new whole, greater than the sum of the parts. A view of the brain that takes plasticity and localizationism into account sees the brain as a complex system in which, as Gerald Edelman argues, smaller parts form a heterogeneous set of components which are more or less independent. But as these parts connect with each other in larger and larger aggregates, their functions tend to become integrated, yielding new functions that depend on such higher order integration. Similarly, when one module fails, others connected to it are altered. When we lose a sense, hearing for example, other senses become more active and more acute to make up for the loss. But they increase not only the quantity of their processing, but also the quality, becoming more like the lost sense. The plasticity researchers Helen Neville and Donald Lawson, measuring neuronal firing rates to determine which sectors of the brain are active, found that deaf people intensify their peripheral vision to make up for the fact that they can't hear things coming at them from a distance.
This is the end of disc number 9. Please insert disc number 10.